The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to our Tuesday Space Show. This is the first Tuesday in our new Las Vegas studios. It's great to be back on the air after that long absence. We're still moving in, so it'll be a while before things are totally back to normal, but it's good to be here. And we have a great guest. We're going to get to talk about the Mars Society and Mars. But first, just a couple of real quick announcements. We're shooting for the 60-minute version of the program tonight with James Burke. But if you ask good questions and we keep it going, we will keep the show going. But we are shooting for the 60-minute format. So watch the clock, and if you want to give us a call, 866-687-7223, make sure you do it while we're still on air. That is always helpful. And the same for sending us an email at drspace at thespaceshow.com. And the same for those of you who like to post comments on our blog. And I'll tell you a little bit more about James, because some things have changed with him since the last time he was on the Space Show. For Wednesday, tomorrow, Hotel Mars with John Batchelor features Dr. Jeff Faust, and he is going to update us from Florida, which is where he's at, on Starship and Starlink. And remember, Batchelor pre-records the show, so we can only listen to it once he has posted it on his show, and then I copy it to my show, or you follow his podcast on iTunes or one of his other CBSI in the world podcast servers. On Friday, we have Jordan and Jenna from Embedded Ventures, and the information is on our website for you to how to find out about Embedded Ventures and Jordan and Jenna. They started the company. But they're with us. And then Friday, Elon from Israel, who has a company called BioHarvest, is with us. They sent out a press release that caught my attention enough to where I sent it to the advisory board about growing cannabis in space on the space station. And I wasn't willing to do that show. But the overwhelming support of the advisory committee was to do it, because there's a lot of space ramifications for maybe medical treatment and other things with cannabis, and also learning how to grow things in space is certainly necessary for space settlement. So they're coming on the show on Sunday, May 22nd. But their program is all about plant growth in space. And so check it out. I gave you the links in the newsletter to go to BioHarvest page and read all about it, and their CEO will be with us on Sunday. And then that takes us into the following week. For today, I'm happy that James Burke is with us, and James is now the executive director, congratulations, of the Mars Society, which is the world's largest space advocacy organization dedicated to sending human explorers to the planet Mars. A former Microsoft engineer and a tech project manager, he leads the fundraising and program development activities of the Mars Society. He also leads the Mars Virtual Reality, Mars VR project, which we've talked about with him before on the Space Show. And it's great to have him back. He is still based in Seattle, Washington. James, welcome back to the Space Show. How are you doing?
It's such a pleasure to be here, David. Thank you. I'm doing very well.
So do you have a hat or a T-shirt or something that says I'm the executive director of the Mars Society?
You know, I wear my Mars flag pin a lot more than I used to, just to get have it be a conversation piece when I'm out doing things.
How do you like the position? Is it what you thought it would be? Is it taxing, so to speak? Are you going to take us to Mars soon?
Well, it's fantastic. I've been here for about 5 months now on the job, full time, and every day is different. I'm juggling a lot of different projects and initiatives. I'm trying to level up what we're doing with fundraising. And just see how we are with all of our programs and drive efficiencies and improvements. We're doing the strategic planning cycle now. We have a great consultant that's helping us on that. And, you know, I'm learning a lot as well. I want to do a good job. This is very important to me. And I've been a volunteer with the Mars Society since we were founded in 1998. And so I'm so thrilled that I got this opportunity. There were 40 different candidates for this role when it opened up last year, and I was very fortunate to be selected to lead it. And, every day is different, and I'm learning a lot, and it's been a great ride so far.
So what are your big projects? What are you working on? What do you want to talk to us about?
Yeah, well, we just announced this week a high school program summer program for high schoolers that we're going to do July 1st. And we're really excited about that. We'd like to do more with educational initiatives overall at the Mars Society, because one of our core goals, one of our core missions really, is to inspire young people. And, you know, because they're the generation that are going to be the ones who will settle Mars. And like I said, I've been at this since the late 90s, and we've always stood for humans to Mars in a decade. Going back to Robert Zubrin's Mars Direct plan that he popularized in the 90s, you know, that was always our mission statement, that we're going to go settle Mars, and once we have the will to go, we can do it within a decade. Well, David, I believe this is the decade we're going to go. There's a lot of things pointing to that, the biggest of which is the Starship Singularity that's about to happen. And that's the idea that when you have a fully fueled Starship built by SpaceX in Earth orbit, it can go anywhere in the solar system with people. And that's really going to open up humanity to be a space-faring society. And Mars is the best destination for them to go. Mars has everything we need to build a whole branch of human civilization. It's got all the resources we need. It has natural gravity. It has a thin atmosphere, and it has all the resources you would need to build a permanent base and thrive there and build things like plastics and electronics. So, you know, I'm really excited that I'm in this role now, because this is the decade I believe we're going to go to Mars with humans, and we need to start getting ready. And so we announced the High School Summer Program. It's modeled on a college-level engineering design course, which we feel is a great way to teach STEM and other technical topics, because when you have students designing something, it's way more active learning than watching a lecture or reading a book. When they're actually talking to each other and thinking through problems and solving them, they learn much more that way.
Absolutely. Is it a contest program? Do students win, and what do they win, or is it just like a summer camp program and it's not outcome-oriented in the terms of a contest?
No, you hit the nail on the head. We are going to have it be a competition. There's actually going to be three phases to this program. It's going to run 6 weeks. It starts July 1st, and you can sign up now by going to our website if you have any high schoolers in your house or know anyone that's interested in this. The first phase will have lectures by several of the leading experts in the Mars field. A lot of the folks that have spoken at our annual conference before, we've lined up to give lectures. So folks like Dr. Chris McKay and Dr. Carol Stoker and Robert Zubrin will give a lecture.
Yeah.
And many others in different areas that are relevant to human Mars exploration and designing a mission. So things like orbital mechanics and mission trajectories. We're going to teach the students all about that. And then the second phase of the program, they're going to get organized into design teams, and they're going to design a surface mission, including the Mars habitat, vehicles, the power they're going to use, any other equipment and supplies. What are they going to do out there? You know, are they going to look for life? Are they going to deploy robots? How big is each crew? And what are their scientific objectives? So the students are going to come up with all of this. They're going to write it up in a report with each team member responsible for authoring a section. And then finally, we'll have a judging of these proposals involving eminent judges. We've already signed up several folks to judge this competition, and the students will give live presentations, and the winners will be chosen based on technical and scientific merit. And so we really feel like every student that participates is really going to get something out of this. They're going to learn a lot about space and designing the Mars mission and all the different astronautics topics that involves. But then they're also going to get a certificate if they participated in this competition. And the winners will get an even better award for winning the Mars Society's high school design competition. And we think that's going to look great on some of those folks' college resumes, college applications. So,
where is it going to be?
This is a great program. Go ahead.
Where is it going to be held?
It's going to be online, and we're going to have a website that students will log into, and they can connect with each other. And we'll also have the lectures there for them available to view. The lectures will be live, so they'll have the opportunity to ask questions and also use the website to send in questions after the lecture.
So it's not an in-person program. It's a virtual program.
Right. We want to make it be as easy as possible for students from around the world to participate.
Oh, so it's
also for all economic levels. The tuition is only $50 for the entire program.
And it's available then for people all over the place, not just the United States.
That's correct. And we're actually going to encourage people, if they want to work with others in their time zone, we can organize teams that way. So then they can meet at a time that they're all awake. They also have the option to work in their own languages. They will need to send in their final report in English, but they can work together in whatever languages they want to use to design the mission.
Cool. So what do they win if they're actually the winners of the design team, other than a participation certificate, or you're not ready to announce that yet?
The other thing we're going to do is for the top designs, we're going to publish them in a book, and we're going to have that be Mars Mission design book that we sell, and they'll be recognized in there as well. And there'll be other things we do for the winners as well.
So they don't get a free trip to Mars, do they?
Hopefully in the next decade we can enable something like that, but not yet.
Is Mr. Musk going to speak and do a lecture at all for rockets to Mars?
We do have an engineer from SpaceX, and I cannot confirm who that is right now.
Terrific. So what about for college students or adults or older people other than high school? Do you have some similar outreach educational programming planned for them?
We actually do have another competition we're running right now for folks that are college or and above, and that's the Telerobotic Mars Expedition Design Competition. We announced that earlier this year, and that's running until June 30th. And so the idea behind that competition is, and it's, you know, any human mission is going to need a 10-ton metric ton lander to at least, right, to land a crew on Mars, land some of the hardware they need. So, and that's one of the key pieces of technology that still needs to be developed for humans to Mars. And so we thought, why don't we have a competition to design a robotic mission that would use such a lander? Because that could justify that type of lander getting built. And what could you do with 10 tons? You know, that's an order of magnitude larger than any mission, any robotic mission that's ever been sent to the surface of Mars. So we want people to get creative and tell us what they would put on that 10-ton lander to land on Mars. Could you put, you know, multiple drones, multiple rovers, maybe a scaled up Mars helicopter or a balloon or an airplane. I mean, there's all kinds of ideas that have been out there. And we'd like to see our teams that are entering this design competition come up with really creative concepts to use that 10-ton lander and deliver a platoon of robots to the surface. And what would they do? And so that's the contest. Again, we've been running that since January, and it ends on June 30th.
I have
For that one, we've done similar contests like that before. We did a colony design contest a couple years ago and a city-state contest for a million-person settlement a year after that. And we're kind of following that same pattern. We'll down-select the top entries to a semifinalist and then finalists, and they'll present at our conference in October.
I have your first email question from Linda, not too far away from you in Portland. And she says, James, just saying 10-ton rover without any context is difficult to comprehend. Do you know the largest rover that's been put on Mars, I guess by the United States, and which rover it is, so we can have an idea of what 10 tons is compared to some of these rovers at Mars that JPL and NASA have done in recent years?
Yeah, so both the Perseverance and Curiosity rovers were about the size of a compact car, right? So you know, maybe 2,000 pounds, right?
Yeah.
So this is an order of magnitude bigger than that. You could literally put like 5 Curiosity rovers on a 10-ton lander.
So that's 20,000 pounds roughly compared to 2,000 pounds.
Correct.
Okay, so that puts it in a better comparative light. Thank you, Linda, for your question. I have another email question, and this is from Todd in San Diego, who always gets in an early email. And he says, I listen to a lot of space show programs, and one of the topics that seems to have a lot of traction on the space show is food in space, and growing food, taking it with you, whatever the food supply might be. How does the Mars Society see food for people going to space? Are they going to be trying to grow food on the spaceship, on Starship? Are you thinking that you can grow food on Mars? Do you address food and growing food and food supplies for people going to Mars?
I think the first crews that go to Mars are not going to be able to survive just on growing food. They're going to need to bring food from Earth, you know, rations and dry food, and you know, kind of like what we do now with ISS, you know, but they will be able to supplement with some food they grow locally on Mars. I think longer term, when you talk about a permanent settlement, a core part of that is going to be a system to grow food, a greenhouse or a hydroponic system that can grow food for a lot of people year-round. And there's a lot of concepts, you know, our conference has had a wealth of speakers on this topic over the years.
Right.
You know, one area of research right now that's very cutting edge is algae, is designing new strains of algae that would be easy to grow in space that could feed people.
Yeah, but they taste like crap.
There's a lot of really good work being done on that.
Yeah, they taste like crap, though. Who wants to eat algae? Maybe they can flavor it up, huh?
There's actually a lot of things you can do with algae. I mean, if you look at the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Meat, you know, that's using protein made from peas, but it's not far off from what you could do with algae-based protein.
Boy, you're going to have to be tough to be an early visitor to Mars in many, many respects. it's not going to be for the simple-minded and the sort of weak people who, you know, want a luxury cruise to Antarctica or something like that. Another topic, although Todd didn't bring it up, is we still don't have any clue for the gravity prescription for humans on a planet, and everybody thinks Mars might be okay because it's more than the moon, but it's still less than Earth. And I know that this gets talked about at Mars Society conferences, too. Your thoughts on, is anyone going to actually be able to compute the gravity prescription for humans in space?
What do you mean by the gravity prescription? Like what it would take to live long term in the future?
Yeah, what's the minimum amount of gravity humans could flourish in? One person who sent you a note before the show started, I think they sent it to you a couple of days ago, John, is talking about the minimum amount of gravity usually for reproduction, because he implies that a settlement would have children on it. But a settlement doesn't necessarily have to welcome children. So maybe reproduction is a guideline, maybe not. I'm not sold on that. But it means what's the minimum amount of gravity where humans could sustain healthy, decent life if they were living on a planet? Could they do it at Mars gravity? Could they do it on lunar gravity? Do they have to have 1G and have a way to stay with 1G at least the majority of the time? We don't know the answer to that. So I know I've heard people at the Mars Society talk about these things. Do you have any thoughts on it? Is there anyone that you know really dedicated to trying to work this out?
You know, I think a problem like this, we're going to have to gather a lot of data, and unfortunately we really haven't been able to do that. We don't really have a good artificial centripetal gravity, mechanism at the ISS, for example. There's
right.
not really been any long-term experiments for Mars gravity and subjecting a human being to it for months or years at a time. So I think we got to really gather more data. But I think the good news is when we look at what the Apollo astronauts did on the moon, I mean, they all were fine. For the most part, they were fine with lunar gravity over days. And Mars is roughly double the gravity of the moon. So, you know, if you argue that, you know, lunar gravity is better than zero G, it's not perfect. It's not the same as Earth gravity, but it's still going to reduce a lot of the health effects that you have with zero G. Then Mars gravity should be even better. And so I think a lot more data needs to be gathered really to answer that question.
Well, you may be right. And as you said, we don't have data. And unfortunately, NASA, who many of us thought would be the leader in getting that data, really hasn't done anything very much on it. So I find disappointing.
I would certainly advocate for some type of Earth orbiting experiment on this. And there's been concepts before where they've had a centripetal gravity module on the station. Maybe one of the new commercial stations will have something like that we can start, you know, figuring this problem out.
Listeners, you can give us a call. Our toll-free line is wide open. No phone line glitches like Sunday, I promise you that. 1-866-687-7223. And in addition, you can continue sending email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. I also want to point out that we are a 501c3 with One Giant Leap Foundation. And we do have sponsors at Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, Astrox, AIAA, Moonwords, Celestis, and the National Space Society. We would not be doing the space show without their great support. And we have openings in our sponsorship program. Or if you just want to use it to promote your ideas to a larger audience, I call it the billboard program, you can do that. And the best way to find out about it is to email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. We are listener supported, and as I said, we are a nonprofit. We're still a nonprofit in California, but that will change in due time. And the best way to support us is PayPal. There's a huge PayPal link at the top of our homepage. And checks can be made payable to One Giant Leap. And there is a new address on the website going to Las Vegas. So if you're going to mail me, or mail the space show, I should say, a check, please, please use the new Las Vegas address. I know we send in forwarding addresses to the post office. I'm not so confident in the post office. So best to use the new address, which should be on the website. Do you still get people, James, saying we shouldn't be going to Mars, we need to go to the moons of Mars?
The old moon versus Mars debate, which is first, right?
Well, not our moon. The moons of Mars is when I'm talking.
Oh,
about,
I see.
You know,
the Phobos.
Yeah, Phobos
instead of the surface.
Right, instead of the surface of Mars. Do you still get that? People saying it's better to go to, say, Phobos than to go to Mars.
I think Phobos would be a good place to, set up a station, basically turn Phobos into a space station. But there's so much science that is waiting to be discovered on the surface of Mars. And there's, if you're really serious about going to Mars and going there to stay, you need to be on the surface because that's where all the resources are. And, as we just talked about, you have natural gravity on the surface. So I think long-term, that's a much better destination to shoot for. It would be really cool to see the first human crews, maybe land on Phobos first. It probably is a little bit easier to design a Phobos mission, although you'd be going all the way to Mars just to land on the moon and not the surface.
And
that's where all the science is.
Wouldn't you be disappointed if you were on that mission?
I'd love to go on any type of mission to Mars, even if it was just a flyby.
I'd be disappointed if I was going to the moons of Mars and not to Mars itself. But you'd see it there so big, and yet you couldn't touch it. That would seem really frustrating. But you're right. It'd be great to be one of the pioneers even doing that. Here's another email for you, and this is Dale in Denver. And Dale says, when the space tourism started up last year, there was an enormous amount of anti-space, anti-billionaire, anti-wealthy people action about going into space. And when Mr. Musk announced buying Twitter, there was surprisingly an enormous amount of really negative chatter about Musk and what he planned to do on Mars, which, of course, was not true, but was still incredibly negative and punitive. Do you at the Mars Society have a program to counter the negative and the anti-space, anti-Mars, anti-billionaire chatter that goes on in this country, which possibly could derail a humans to Mars program depending on the influence it has in an upcoming government?
Yes, this does come up, and what we like to talk about are the positive reasons of why you want to settle space. There's a lot of reasons to go to Mars beyond just it's a billionaire's idea. You want to go to Mars because there could be life there. And if we discover life on Mars, even microbial life, that would be very profound. That's a question that human beings have been weighing for thousands of years, and we have it in our power to discover the answer to that by exploring Mars and looking for life. But also, Mars represents the future. I mean, if you believe that we're going to go out into the solar system and inhabit a bunch of different places, Mars is the top destination because of what it has available for human beings. The other thing is, I hear a lot of dystopian views these days, and, people rightly so, our country is very divided, and there's a lot of political rhetoric, and it's hard to cut through all that when you're talking about space, but it's necessary because space is something that's for everyone. And when we work to inspire young people, it cuts across all those political divides. Everyone understands, I think, when they get inspired by us and by other space advocacy groups, that there's a possibility of a positive human future where we're out there settling the solar system and making scientific discoveries and improving life back on Earth. There's a huge amount of benefits that will come to people on Earth as we explore the solar system and as we explore Mars. And so those are the points I like to talk about. I also like to talk about how Elon Musk's company, SpaceX, has cut through and disrupted a lot of the aerospace industry. And, if you just look at their traditional business of launching satellites with the Falcon 9 rocket, how successful they've been by challenging assumptions and going back to first principles, And those are really solid approaches that I think when you look at them, there's a lot to admire there beyond that there's an iconoclastic billionaire at the top that maybe wants to buy a social media network.
You have a conference coming up. We haven't mentioned that. That's in October, and this year it's going to be at Arizona State in Tempe, which is adjacent to Phoenix. I love the title of it, 25th Annual International Mars Society Convention, Searching for Life with Heavy Lift. Tell us about that title. Who came up with that? I think that's a great title.
That is our theme for the conference. We always try to pick a theme every year, and so we sat, Robert and a few of us sat down to start planning the conference this year, and we knew we were going to go back to in person. The last 2 years we've had virtual conferences, and we've been very successful at that. I actually was on your show talk right before our 2020 conference, and that was a fantastic event. We had 10,000 attendees virtually. We had the NASA Administrator, Jim Bridenstine, as a speaker. We had Elon as a speaker. We had several other fantastic, basically everyone we ever wanted to speak at our conference spoke that year. And it was fantastic. And we repeated it last year. We had Pam Mulroy, who's the Deputy Administrator of NASA, and several other prominent speakers. And this year is going to be back to in-person. So we thought, you know, what's going to be the theme this year? Well, what's going on? Well, we're about to have the SLS and the Starship ready to go. And we can go really go after the goal I was talking about earlier, which is searching for life on Mars. That's the number one reason to explore Mars that everyone can get behind. And we're going to do it with heavy lift. So we thought that that would be a great theme to solicit creative ideas for a poster contest that's going on. We always have a poster contest every year. We've got some fantastic poster designs for our annual conferences. I'm also really excited about Arizona State University. We've got support from the department there, headed by Dr. James Bell, who was designed many of the cameras on the Mars rovers. Also, Greg Autry is an excellent supporter of ours, and he leads the Thunderbird School of Business at Arizona State University. So they'll both be speaking, as well as the principal investigator of NASA's Psyche mission, Wendy Elkins-Panton, is going to be a speaker as well. So. It's going to be a great event. Phoenix is a beautiful city. There's lots of hotels right by the university. We're going to be at the main campus downtown in Tempe at the Memorial Union, and I'm really looking forward to that event.
And it's,
we're also going to – go ahead. David,
no, I was going to just say, it's also only a five-hour drive from Las Vegas. So I like that idea. You have a caller on hold. I want to keep talking to you about it, but can we go take your caller?
Absolutely.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show today. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is John in Fort Worth.
Hi, John. You going to go to Tempe? If you go, I'll go.
No, I don't think so.
John.
I already have it. What time frame is this?
October 20th to 23rd. It's to Phoenix. It's not too far from Fort Worth.
Okay, well, maybe we could think about that then. I'm too early to comment on that. But I was going to think that there's a lot of problems, though, on Mars, particularly given the duration of time that people are going to have to be there if they go with anything like current propulsion technology. And there's a lot of challenges there. I mean, the gravity was mentioned. There's also the radiation problem and the soil toxicity issue, for instance. These are all kind of, it sounds like a very risk to the crew to go do that at the current time unless you have a faster transition time and a shorter duration, at least for the early exploration, to get a better feel for how it really is.
Well, I would say, you know, the radiation and soil problems are solvable. And the voyage out to Mars is not that different than long ocean voyages on Earth in history. You know, it's about a six-month trip to get to Mars with conventional propulsion. If we had nuclear propulsion, it would be a three-month trip, and you know, there's possibilities that that's going to be developed soon as well. There's teams working on those concepts, such as David Potson's Space Nukes company. But, you know, I think they're all solvable problems. It shouldn't rule out going to Mars as a destination. And we really need to go. There's a lot of reasons to go to Mars to to search for life, to inspire people, to get ready for the future. And, you know, I personally am working very hard to make that a reality.
Well, it's certainly interesting to see what happens there. But, I mean, that is, of course, you know, Elon Musk is focused on going to Mars, of course. That would seem to be the earliest possibility to have a mission there, wouldn't it?
He is currently out in front of anyone that we, you know, essentially the Starship. And I actually thought when I interviewed him at our conference in 2020, I asked him about the timeline. And essentially, as soon as they get Starship fully fueled in Earth orbit, you know, first they need to get it orbital, and hopefully that's this year. And then they need to make sure they can automatic refuel, use automated refueling techniques to send a second Starship to, you know, fully fuel the first one. Once you have that milestone, he's gonna go around the moon on the Dear Moon mission, and then you've got the first cargo mission to Mars very shortly after that, probably 2 to 3 years after the refueling milestone is reached. So that's all very doable. Like, that could happen in the 2020s, in the late 2020s. SpaceX is a company. Their mission is to build a self-sustaining city on Mars. And so they're going to send out a propellant factory first, then they're going to send a crew out, but then they're going to really quickly shift into building that city and all the infrastructure they need. And so, yes, I believe that's going to happen well before NASA, returns to the moon with SLS and the Artemis program a couple times and then decides to start working on Mars. I think that's all going to happen very quickly once Starship is up and running.
Yeah. Well, that's on the optimistic side, is that he does seem to have a real program there now. We'll have to wait and see what the first launch is going to be. Very interesting, in my opinion. Same thing for SLS, for that matter. But it would be maybe we get both those to happen this year. It would be nice.
But isn't it great we're talking about that there's heavy lift rockets coming? I mean, I've been waiting for this my whole life. I was born in 1975, and the last Apollo mission was 1972. So I've been waiting a long time to see this.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we've been waiting. Yeah, I have to admit, I remember when they first moon flight, and the vice president suggested we might go to Mars by 2000, and I'm going, oh, that's too long. We ought to be there by the mid-80s. Well, that didn't turn out quite right, did it?
Well, let's hope that we're able to go and nothing interferes with it. So we're not there yet. I always see the risk out there, and I actually see more economic and political risk than I do technical risk. So
a little of both. There's a lot of risk. I'll say that. Yes. Well, anyway, I guess this is interesting. Anyway, I better get off here and see if I get somebody else calling. By the way, the phone line is working a lot better than last time, too.
Well, that's because I didn't call forward it and forget to take it off of call forwarding. So,
but it sounds good this time. All right.
All right. Thanks, John. Bye-bye. Listen,
John.
You can give us a call, and our toll-free number is the way it always is, and you should know it by heart. 1-866-687-7223. Going back to your conference, I'm looking at the conference website. So I guess it's open now for people who want to deliver a paper at a track. It's going to be a similar kind of format to what you've had before, correct?
That's right. We're going back to our 4-day format. We'll have track talks in the afternoon of the first 3 days. So anyone can fill out our abstract form to become a speaker at the conference. We also are really excited about having a virtual component to the conference. So now that we've done two virtual conferences, we can't just go back to, you know, everything being the way it was. We're going to need to have a virtual component as well, have ways for people to watch the live stream, but also network with each other. You know, for our 2021 virtual conference, we did something really interesting. I thought we had a room in VR that people could log into, and they could watch the conference on a big screen in the room in VR, but they could also ask questions on a microphone. So we have this virtual room with all these people in it, that were meeting each other for the first time in, you know, in the metaverse, right?
Right.
They could see each other as sort of, they had their, like an avatar that looks like a cartoon character. They could see each other, but they can also talk to each other. And then they could also watch the conference on the Zoom call within the room. It was on a big screen on the wall. They could walk up to the microphone and ask a question. We actually relayed some of those questions to our plenary speakers like Pam Melroy and some of the others. And so that worked out really well. That was a really interesting way for people to network virtually. And we'd like to find more things like that for this conference. We want to have a way for people to participate. Even if they're not in Tempe, they can ask a question of the speakers. They can connect with other attendees, whether in Tempe or other virtual attendees. So we're working out how that's all going to work, but you can guarantee, I can guarantee you that we're going to have a great virtual experience for people that aren't able to come to Tempe. But right now we are taking registrations for the in-person attendees. That's on our website. And like you said, David, we also are, any papers people want to submit, abstracts for to speak, we're taking those as well up until August 31st.
Have you lined up any keynote speakers, or is it too early so far?
We have Jim Bell from the, you know, Arizona State Department Chair. He's also been part of several of the Mars Rover teams. He'll be a plenary speaker. And also Lindy Elkins-Tanton, the PI for Psyche. That's an asteroid mission coming up.
Uh-huh.
And then Greg Autry. And also Dr. Shannon Rupert, who runs our Mars Desert Research Station, will be speaking and also leading a panel to talk about some of the latest crews that have stayed at our station and some of the research they've been doing.
Well, I wrote it down on my calendar. I would really like to be able to go down to it. So it's on my calendar. Listeners, again, October 20th to 23rd. And you can get to it by going to MarsSociety.org. And it looks like it'll be really great. And if you want to deliver a paper on a topic, I strongly urge you to submit an abstract as soon as possible, even though you may think it's a long ways off. They fill up really quickly. Great grammar there. And you may find that the group that you could be participating in is already full. And that has happened to many, many people. So if you're interested, check it out and submit an abstract. It's not too early, for sure, to do that. What else is the Mars Society planning for 2022, or do we start looking into 2023?
We have a couple other things we're working on. So I came on your show and talked about Mars VR last time. That's our virtual reality project.
Right.
So let me give you an update on that, because we've actually done a lot of work since then. We have now a digital twin of our Mars Desert Research Station. That's our real-life station in Utah that we've had for 20 years. We've had over 1,500 people on a crew at the station, over 280 crews. And what we wanted to do was build a virtual reality version of it so people could train at home before they went out to Utah. But we could also show it at events and show it to people that didn't know anything about the Mars Society. And they could learn about what we do at the station. But also they could get some kind of walk around on Mars in virtual reality. That in and of itself is a cool experience for people. And so this is now available for download if you go to marsvr.com. We have that website as well, and you can visit the Mars Desert Research Station virtually. You can learn all about the different buildings and what the work we do there, the research we do there, and do some training as well. It works. We have two different versions of Mars VR. One works just within a web browser, so no special hardware needed.
Okay.
You can go around the campus. You can look for Easter eggs. We have a little kind of mini game in there where you're finding different Easter eggs. And have a score running. And there's other little things you could find in there. We also have a full virtual reality immersive application that requires a VR headset, like an Oculus Quest, or one of the other, you know, headsets that are out there, like HTC Vive. There's many of them now. But that one, you can actually do the training that we have people do in Utah. You'll learn how to put on a spacesuit and how to grow plants in the greenhouse, and how to collect samples and bring them back inside the station and analyze them in the science dome. And so that one, we're really proud of it. I've been actually working on that project for 5 years now. Time flies. But we showed that here in Seattle at the recent Yuri's Night event at the Museum of Flight. And that was a fantastic event. It was huge. It was about 300 people there. And we had our VR booths up and running and took people through that. And everyone was really thrilled to get to walk on Mars and learn about what we did, what we do with the station. And we want to do more things like Mars VR. I mentioned the virtual room we had at the conference. I think it would be great for us or somebody to create a Mars metaverse. So like a virtual world that was a digital twin of Mars, you know, so you have the real Mars terrain, the real landing sites, and you can learn about the different rover missions and landing missions, but that also you could have some of these future concepts like permanent bases in 3D, as 3D models you can walk around in, and we could have it be like a meeting place year-round. And so that's an area I'd like to work more on this year to build a Mars metaverse and probably partner up with some companies to do that. But, yeah, I mean, that's an area of interest I personally have. We always like to promote what we do, the work we do at the Mars Desert Research Station. We have two different research stations that we operate. One is up in the Arctic, and we haven't actually been up there in a couple of years. We are going to plan a mission next year to our Flashline station up in Devon Island, Canada. And then the MDRS just is wrapping up its field season. So our field season normally runs from October through May, so we're just at the tail end of that. And at the end of the field season, we'll have our University Rover Challenge event, and that's June 1st this year. Now, it's not open to the public, but we will have many student teams from over 10 countries. I think we have about 36 student teams this year, and it's our first in-person event in 2 years for the University Rover Challenge. So excited about that, and excited about all of the work we do with analog research stations. We also are pretty early on working with our a new concept for a station in Australia. And so we have a chapter in Australia that has been going out to a site in southern Australia called Arkaroola for several years. And this is a really special place because it has one of the few places on Earth that has stromatolites, which are some of the oldest fossils. They're fossilized structures that are about 3 billion years old or more, made by cyanobacteria. And cyanobacteria are the bacteria that are responsible for the oxygenation of our atmosphere. And so 2 to 3 billion years ago, when they were active and forming these stromatolites, was the same time that Mars was also a warm planet. And so what we'd like to do is build a station out in Australia that takes all the learnings we've had from our station in Utah and the Arctic and make it a real world-class facility that other space agencies can use. But we could use the fact that there's stromatolites there to pilot and pioneer some of the techniques we would use to look for stromatolites on Mars. So it's kind of the same activity we would do on Mars. And that's an enhancement of what we do in Utah. Utah is a great location. It looks like Mars, very much a Mars geologic analog. And we've had crews out there for, you know, 20 years now exploring. We actually found a really large dinosaur dig site just north of our station. It was one of the biggest dinosaur finds in the last 30 years worldwide. But the fact that we could go have a station in Australia that we have stromatolites as a topic of exploration is really exciting. And so, you know, that's a project we're just getting started on, and we hope that in the next couple of years that'll be up and running.
Does New Zealand have a chapter for the Mars Society?
We do have a small chapter in New Zealand. One of the more prominent scientists, Tarantino, leads that chapter, yeah.
Just curious. So the global interest in getting to Mars is pretty strong, isn't it?
Oh, it's, David, I mean, I've been at this for 24, 25 years now, and every year Mars is just more popular, and it just feels like it's getting closer all the time. I think the biggest thing that helped us was the movie The Martian back in 2016.
Uh-huh.
And that really put in regular people's mind that going to Mars is a near-term thing. It's not a science fiction mission from 50 years from now or 100 years from now. It's something we can do with today's technology. And so, yeah, interest around the world grows all the time. We have a very vibrant set of chapters around the world and in most countries, including China and India and places like Kenya and Bangladesh and Egypt, all have chapters. And so, yeah, interest in Mars is at an all-time high, and it seems like we set that new bar every year.
What does it take to be a member of the Mars Society, or is it a membership organization?
We are a membership organization. We've always been a grassroots, all-volunteer organization throughout our history. And you can join the Mars Society by going to our website. There's a big join button. It costs $50 a year, and that supports our programs and initiatives like the summer program I mentioned earlier that we're starting, like the Mars Desert Research Station. We also have a discounted rate for students and senior citizens of $35 a year. And there's also a way to buy 3 years at once. It's a little bit more of a discount. So we definitely invite everyone to join the Mars Society, become a paid member, and that gives you access to discounts on our conference and on merchandise. We recently had a member survey that we put out. So we'd love to hear people's feedback on how we can get better as an organization, what other activities we can do. You know, education was something that a lot of people wanted us to do more of, and so we heard that feedback, and we're starting up this high school program, and we'll be doing more with education as well. As a matter of fact, I should mention that we just won the Mars Desert Research Station, and Dr. Shannon Rupert, who's our director of that program, we just won a NASA grant for the Utah NASA Spaceward Bound program. The Utah NASA Space Grant Consortium gave us the grant, and it's for our Spaceward Bound program at the station where we are bringing Mars to some of the local students in Utah. Last time I was out at the station last month in April, I had an opportunity to see Dr. Rupert and some of the other teachers with NASA Spaceward Bound teaching some local middle schoolers at the station about geology, different ways to find rocks out there, and we also did a dinosaur hike. So education is a really important aspect of the Mars Society that we're trying to grow and do more things with.
Really cool. Listeners, you can still call us. There is time if you would like to find out more about the Mars Society or talk to James. The toll-free number is 866-687-7223. It is available. And there's still time for your emails. drspace@thespaceshow.com. And Paul is in New York. And he says, do you have a realistic timeline for the first actual settlement on Mars, meaning the people that go there are not coming back to Earth?
Well, it's hard to pinpoint a timeline until we actually have hardware flying, but I think it is very soon. I don't think the first mission that goes is going to be a one-way mission with crew that stays there and starts a settlement. I do think the first mission or two or three will be round trips because we'll want our folks that are visiting Mars to come back and tell everyone else here on Earth what it was like. But I think pretty quickly you're going to start having the sort of one-way trips. And there's not going to be any shortage of people that would be willing to go, I believe.
On a one-way mission, do you think there'll be people who want to go?
I do. I mean, a lot of people would like to retire on Mars. I know Elon's one of those folks. And I think once we have regular flights to Mars, it's not going to be hard to recruit people that go one way and start building up our million-person settlement that we're going to have eventually.
Well, I can imagine going. It would be great if you could go faster so you didn't have to spend 6 months in the can going out there or 7 months. But I could see going and coming back, but I think it'd be really hard to go and not come back. But
I definitely think we will shorten the duration of the mission. From chemical propulsion 6 month trip, I do think we are going to have small nuclear reactors available soon. I know there's a lot of work being done, and it's possible. It's just one of those pieces of technology that has to be engineered and developed. But I believe that we are going to pretty quickly shorten the time to 3 months or less.
Do you personally think that there's life on Mars? I mean, why hasn't it been announced or found, or as some people think, NASA doesn't want to announce it because that will stop the exploration program?
Well, I don't believe that myself. I don't want to get into different conspiracy theories of suppressing life, but if, you know, you ask me, do I think there's life on Mars? Yes, I do. If you look at the Viking labeled release experiment that Dr. Gil Levine was the principal investigator of back in the 70s, that had pretty good evidence of life. It was controversial then and up until the present day is still controversial. But, you know, that was really the only experiment that's been flown to Mars to look for life in a serious way. We, you know, all these rovers that have gone up until Perseverance really didn't have any life detection equipment on them. So we haven't really been looking. And I do believe that because there's liquid water under the surface all over Mars, and Mars was once a warm and wet planet, and there's interchange between Earth and Mars and other planets just by virtue of meteorites. When you look over geological timescales, there's a lot of material that gets exchanged between the planets. And so it would not be hard for the microbes to hitchhike on a meteorite and make it over to Mars. Or even because Mars was warm and wet before the Earth, it's possible that life could have gotten started on Mars first and migrated over to Earth through meteorite interchange. And so, you know, we could all be Martians, basically. But I do believe we are going to look for life soon and find evidence of microbial life. Beyond that, I don't want to speculate, but it's definitely a reason to go, as I've said.
I agree, and I also think there's probably at least past life on Mars. I'm not so sure about any kind of current activity, but I do think that Gil's experiment was successful. I kind of think he got a raw deal, but
yes,
and I know from his appearances on the space show, he thought he got a raw deal too, and I think that's too bad because he didn't deserve that.
I couldn't agree more.
For Mars, do you? At one time, there was a lot of thought that if we go to the moon first, we'll get stuck on the moon, and Mars won't ever happen. Now, I haven't heard that lately. I really haven't. But Musk is actually making hardware for going to the moon, and Bezos talks about it and wants to get in on the act, and so do others. Do you think there's going to be some kind of competition? Do you think we might get stuck on the moon and not be able to get off and go to Mars?
I don't think so. I think we're going to do it all in tandem. I think we're going to build the Starship, and that's easy. Once you have a fully built Starship in Earth orbit, it's not a huge stretch to fly that sucker to the moon and land on it. It's just a little bit more engineering work that needs to be done, and they're already under contract with NASA to do that, turn it into a human landing system. So Starship's going to the moon, but Starship was designed to land on Mars. And so it'd be silly for us to be flying Starship only to the moon permanently if it's ready to go to Mars. And, you know, if something happens and SpaceX is not successful with Starship, you know, the SLS is almost available. It's going to be launching the Artemis program. And that's the type of rocket that Robert Zubrin helped design in the 80s to, you know, as part of his work at Lockheed Martin when they designed the Mars Direct Plan. And so the Mars Direct Plan was designed around a rocket like the SLS. And if you haven't read Robert's seminal work on, you know, the case for Mars, the idea with Mars Direct is that you're going to live off the land. You're going to send out a cargo mission to Mars first without any people, and it's going to make propellant for your return trip. And the spacecraft that you're going to use to come home And only when that's up and running, then you send out the people on the second flight. But it's essentially two flights to get to Mars with a crew and the cargo mission with the return ship. And that's very affordable. That's a very affordable Mars program. It's flying, essentially flying one SLS a year for a Mars program. That could fit easily within NASA's budget, even doing the moon.
Absolutely. I have an email, excuse me, from Robert, of all things, not the Robert, but another Robert from Florida. And he says, do you as the executive director of the Mars Society get any advanced information that might lead to us knowing when this FAA Starship thing will get settled and when Starship will fly?
Well, that is actually a topic we've weighed in on recently. We wrote a position paper, a policy statement about this.
Uh-huh.
And Robert authored that, and I actually sent it certified mail to five federal agencies and got back response, you know, form letter type responses that they received the letter. But we urged the FAA to approve the Boca Chica permit, launch permit, ASAP. They're really dragging it out. I believe what I've heard is the Interior Department may be the one that's holding it up. But, you know, we certainly want that to get approved. There's no reason for it not to be. We've been flying missions at Kennedy Space Center, you know, since the 60s, and it's surrounded by a wildlife refuge. And, you know, there's been many studies done on how the space activities have affected or not affected the wildlife there. So there's really no reason to hold up the permit that SpaceX is seeking to get at Boca Chica to launch the Starship orbitally. And it's really necessary. And it's good for Brownsville, Texas, that they're out there. They're pouring money into the local infrastructure and the schools. Elon's donated several tens of millions of dollars already to the city. And so, you know, we're huge supporters of, obviously, of what he's working out there in Boca Chica. And I think that, you know, the FAA will announce it soon that they've approved it. They did delay it one more time last month, but I believe it's imminent that they're going to get approved.
Well, I have been to the Cape multiple times, and I would imagine a good portion of the listeners have been, too. So the damn thing is surrounded by alligators everywhere. The amount of bird life all over the Cape, if you drive around, and even you can go to some of the beaches, you know, out there in parts of the Cape, the wildlife is just rich. I mean, literally rich. It is flourishing, and doesn't appear to me that the rocket launches have done anything. Maybe they fertilized the area, maybe. I don't know. But there doesn't seem to be any shortage of wildlife in and around the Cape. So I think they'd make a hard case to prove that rocket launches done correctly screw up a wildlife area. I've been there. I don't see it. And I'm sure you've been there, and other listeners who have been there say the same thing. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, I spent lots of summers in Florida growing up. I actually went to the University of Florida, go Gators. Uh-huh. And I agree with you, David. Kennedy Space Center is teeming with wildlife. And, you know, plus the other thing, as I mentioned, out in Boca Chica, if you develop that area economically, you know, people are going to take better care of that facility. It's still going to be a wildlife refuge, and they're just going to have more budget to preserve it at the state level.
Well, and the wildlife is protected at the Cape. There was a very, very high wildlife consciousness of the people I talked to. Granted, I was doing interviews and meeting people, so they're probably putting the best foot forward always. But they really have a much higher consciousness and awareness of wildlife preservation and keeping it healthy than the average person does. So
yeah, I would agree with that.
So I hope they clear Boca quickly, and I hope he has successful test demos, and he can get it going. And I guess we'll find out. I've heard the end of this month, but, you know, who knows? You're waiting on the government, you know, like waiting for Godot, I guess. But hopefully it will definitely happen. What else can you tell us in terms of Mars Society activity? What are you thinking about doing for 2023 that might be different or new or additional programs? An organization always has to change and evolve to stay on the cutting edge. So what are you planning to do for 2023 to evolve and stay on the cutting edge? You're the executive director, so now I'm asking you, what are your thoughts for the coming year?
Well, I think there's two things we need to do. I've talked about the need for, like, outreach and inspiring people, and our VR project, you know, was meant to do that. It was meant to be used at events. So what we're going to do is we're going to mobilize a lot of our chapters to go use Mars VR as a tool, but also just talk to people at different space events. One event that I wanted to bring up because it's local to you, David, in Las Vegas, we're going to actually be at the Star Trek convention in August this year at the Las Vegas Convention Center, August 25th to 28th. Robert will be speaking. This is not a typical Star Trek convention. This is like the big one that they have in Las Vegas, and they typically have science programming as part of what they do there. And so we're going to have a first-class table in the vendor hall where we're going to have our VR exhibits up. We're going to have literature and volunteers talking to people and merchandise. But Robert will be speaking about human Mars exploration. And that is a good, I think that event, if we do it well, if it goes the way I think it will, that'll be a great template for other chapters of ours to do similar events, to go to similar events like that. And, you know, Star Trek conventions, like maybe Star Wars Celebration is coming up later this month in Anaheim. That would have been a good place for us to have a table at. We want to really build out and mobilize our chapters and have them and support them to go to events like that and talk about the Mars Society to the attendees and reach out to all the folks that haven't heard of us before but are interested in space and interested in a positive human future and get those folks, you know, aware of what we do at the Mars Society. We're always looking for volunteers, by the way. We're always looking for folks to help out with outreach activities. We're about to announce a new ambassador program we're going to have where we train people to talk about Mars and go out to high schools and assemblies and other events on their own and be ambassadors of what we do. Definitely we need volunteers to help us with our STEM education initiatives. We have, you know, I mentioned the Spaceward Bound program we have at our station in Utah. There's actually a cohort that is coming up later this year that we're still recruiting folks to join. And, you know, we also could always use volunteers for some of the mundane things that any nonprofit needs to do, like fundraising and marketing collateral and helping with our IT infrastructure. So if you're interested in helping the Mars Society and, you know, becoming part of our team, join us and reach out to me, visit our website and find out more. But we've always been a grassroots organization, and that's the way we believe that we can get a lot of people excited about going to Mars.
James, is this the 56-year mission, Las Vegas, at Bally's, August 25th to the 28th?
That's correct.
Wow.
It's at the Las Vegas Convention Center.
Okay, they call it I guess this is the hotel, Bally's Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. The Intergalactic Threl Empire is the sponsor. I would love to go to that since it's just around the corner. Jerry Ryan's going to be there too. Wow. I don't see Zubrin's face on their conference page. I only see the Star Trek people.
He has not been announced yet, but he will be speaking there. I'll be there too. So I'd love for you to go.
Okay, well, you know, I'm going to mark it down. I'm printing it out, and literally, it's 15 minutes away. So I would love to do it, and I'd love to hear the science part. But I used to go to Star Trek conventions all the time with my kids. It's been quite a while since I've been to one because they haven't wanted to go to one. But we had grand times at them, so that'd be a lot of fun. So, yeah, maybe I can volunteer and help with the Mars Society as well. So you and I will talk about that, okay?
That'd be fantastic. We'd love to have your help.
Yeah. Is it one specific day for the science, or is it scattered throughout the entire three-day event?
They have speakers every night, so we're settling on which night Robert's going to speak. But, yeah, from what I understand, I haven't been to this particular Star Trek convention, but it is the big one. It's the one that a lot of the cast and crew typically are at. Like you mentioned, Jerry Ryan will be there this year. And it's, you know, it's in Las Vegas. It's a pretty large facility, the convention center there. And so you have a lot of people there that come to that. The vendor hall is going to be huge, and we're going to have, from what I understand, a prime spot to talk to people and talk about Mars, and I'm really excited about that.
Well, will you keep me posted on it? Because I would really like to go. I don't think I'd make a hotel reservation. I'd just, you know, drive over to it. But keep me posted on it, and if I can do it and help out with the Mars Society, I'd love to do it. So let's you and I talk about that, okay?
That's great. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's always fun to see and hear Bob. And he's very, very inspiring. And, you know, listeners, if you've never seen Bob in person, it's a lot different than just listening to him on the space show or a podcast or something. If you get a chance to see Bob in person, it's well worth going through the effort to go see him in person. What else should we talk about with the new Mars Society under your leadership?
Well, I want us to be a nonprofit that has mass appeal. I want to attract young people and folks from other backgrounds than, you know, most people that work in the aerospace industry. You know, that's why education is important, and reaching out to different members of the public through these events like the Star Trek convention and our, you know, some of the other things we're going to do. You know, I think I want the Mars Society to stand for an inclusive organization that accepts people from all different views and backgrounds and cultures and has and ideas, because that's really the way you build innovation. You know, I worked at Microsoft for 20 years, and I had drilled into me how do you do good software engineering, how do you do innovative design. And I want the Mars Society to kind of have that spirit of innovation and pioneering the future and being forward-thinking. And so, you know, we've announced these contests, the high school program, and we'll have more things to announce, you know, later this year and in the next year. But you know, that's kind of what I see the Mars Society standing for long-term is we're helping pioneer the future and helping humanity transform into a space-faring society and for the benefit of the people on Earth. You know, we go to Mars, we go to the other destinations in the solar system to make life better for people on Earth. And, you know, there should never be a debate about whether it's good to spend money on space. It's been, for me personally, it's been proven that investing in space, you know, has huge benefits way beyond the dollars that are put in. There was even a report, I think I saw last year, the year before, that NASA commissioned that literally measured the economic impact of NASA's budget and all the programs that NASA spends money on, and the benefits dwarf the cost. All the infrastructure and ecosystem that NASA programs create dwarfs the cost of the actual program. So that's what I think I think the Mars Society could stand for more space companies getting founded, companies that have dual uses of, you know, innovations that work on Earth, but also are going to be used to settle Mars. You know, I'd like to have us do more with that, and that's some of the areas I'll be working on later this year.
Well, I have every bit of confidence you'll do that. I'll look forward to talking to you more about it as you progress with your leadership and your idea, and look forward to seeing you at some of these events. And I think it'll be a lot of fun to go to the Star Trek convention and help out with the Mars Society. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. It's been fun talking to you, and we will stay in touch. And listeners, the Mars Society is coming up. Again, it's later in October. If you want to do a Mars Society show about 5 weeks out, something like that, or you want one of the conference leaders to do it, let me know. I'm happy to do that. And or maybe Bob will want to do it. He sometimes does it. But I'd be happy to keep publishing the Mars Society and keep the conference in people's minds and hopefully help get a lot of people attending. So
that would be fantastic, David. Thank you so much.
And congratulations for becoming the executive director. And I will look forward to seeing you soon and talking to you some more about Mars.
Thank you so much, David. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you this evening. And thanks to everyone who's listened.
All right.
And I'll see you on Mars.
I hope sooner. And I'll send you the archives when I get it done. And hopefully it'll be up and running tonight, but otherwise early tomorrow morning. And stay well and healthy. Listeners, thanks to John for his call and to those of you for your emails. And as always, it's best to look up. And I hope you looked up and you saw the lunar eclipse a couple of days ago. It was cloudy here and I didn't get to see it. So, but I saw it online. So really, really interesting. Everybody have a great rest of the week, and stay healthy, stay safe, play hard, work hard, and think about Mars, because I think we're going to get there in my lifetime, and I'm turning 76 in about 2 weeks, and I absolutely believe we will get there before I check out or before I don't even know what date it is. So I think the fact that Musk says he's going to do that in by the end of this decade, I think he'll probably miss that target, but probably not by much. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm sure most of the listeners are too. James, take care, and we will see you soon and talk to you soon. And congratulations again on your new position with the Mars Society.
Thank you so much, David.
Listeners,
have a good night.
Likewise. Good night from James, David, and the Space Show. And once again, people, do look up. There's so many cool things to look up in the night sky, especially. Take advantage of it. Everybody have a great week. Once again, goodbye from the Space Show.